Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers, because everything they do starts with you.
This is the September 30 edition of Commodity Week.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers, because everything they do starts with you.
On September 30th, USDA released a bearish grain stocks report. We'll find out why the corn numbers were bigger today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with University of Illinois ag economist Daryl Good. In studio today, Mike Georgie from Allendale out of Mahomet, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign. On the phone line as a panelist, Mike Zuzlow of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. Well, let's start our discussion today, Bill Mayer, with this question. Why is it that USDA raised its ending stocks number, and what's on hand in the United States in the grain stocks report on Friday afternoon to 1.128 billion bushels?
Well, let me preface my answer with putting things in perspective. We use about 250 million bushels of corn a week anymore, and when we're talking about 120 million, 140 million more than what people were expecting. And we got to keep that in perspective. That's, about a half a week's usage. But I think what it tells us that we did some rationing as we got through the summer months. We probably had less feed usage. And we'll see where they sort everything out on the October 12th supply-demand report. But The thing that I guess bothers me a little bit is when I look at the cash bases in the country, especially in central Illinois, it sure doesn't back that up as we talked about a year ago at the same time.
Bill Maris with Strategic Farm Marketing. He's in Champaign. From Allendale, Mike Georgie is with us out of Mahomet. Mike?
Yeah, I think the biggest surprise in the report was the feed usage. And they knocked down the corn usage, which a lot of people kind of expected, but they also expected the wheat usage to be higher, and we didn't see it there either. So a lot of people are asking the question, what did we feed our cattle? I mean, we are 5 to 7% higher on placements and in the feedlots through the June-August time frame, and it seems like we haven't picked that up to feed them. But the thing is, that's the numbers we have to deal with.
And Mike Zuzlow from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting.
Well, Todd, I think, Bill and Mike hit the majors. I think maybe the DDGs is part of it, too. I question why the trade was looking at and not looking at the bean number and how the bean number was friendly, but it was pretty much overlooked. It was not taken at face value at all. So I think the trade was on a different mindset from the get-go, and I'm skeptical whether the trade would have reacted positively even with bullish numbers. That's kind of how I was going into the report. And I guess, from another perspective, too, I've noticed in the last 5 or 6 years on grain stocks estimates, there's only about, 6 or 7 firms that do that, and God bless them for doing it, because it's a very hard thing to do because there are such big switches, and statistically it's kind of hard to get a hold of. So I think when you have fewer companies doing the pre-estimates, you're probably going to be open to a lot more volatility when the actual numbers come out. And I think corn fit that bill on Friday.
The average trade guess, by the way, for the corn at 964 million, again, a 1.128 billion bushel estimate from the United States Department of Agriculture. You mentioned the soybeans and the stocks number, Mike Zuzulo, at 214 million bushels. It was below the average trade guess of 225, but the trade didn't really take that into effect very much. They did temper the losses, I suppose, compared to what happened in corn and soybeans.
Yeah, I mean,
corn and wheat.
Yeah, the percentage losses, you know, for corn on the day were 6%, and wheat it was just under 7%. So the beans were only down a little over 4%. So I take your point there. I think, though, also on Thursday, Todd, we saw weekly export sales of over a million metric tons. Then we saw Mexico come in for another 105,000 after that. Very strong weekly export sales. A lot of people on the floor talking about China not buying or they're buying South American beans. Here again, though, the trade really didn't want to price that in, and I just think that we're going back and forth between the outside markets, and if you get some friendly fundamentals for supply-demand now, it's almost the exact opposite of what we were dealing with 45 days ago. If you got bearish fundamentals in the micro fundamentals for supply-demand, you had the trade look at the bullish side but not the bearish side because the outside markets were friendly. I think we flip-flopped that tendency, and the emotion has switched to a much more bearish sentiment now.
Bill Mayer, you mentioned that basis levels remain strong in central Illinois, yet with these numbers we have a divergence in what the forecast looks like for the coming year. A strong basis tells us that, well, probably a short supply of corn, and these numbers say we had more on hand than we thought.
Yeah, it points to a short supply of corn, but it also points to whether the farmer is selling the corn or not. One thing that kind of stood out to me on the stocks report was that the stocks were relatively weighted towards the on-farm stocks versus the off-farm stocks, and I thought that was kind of interesting because typically it's easier to buy the off-farm stocks and not the on-farm stocks. So It also speaks to the fact that the farmer may not be willing to sell it here.
The farmer may not be willing to sell it, and I suppose we do have to think about this in the way the numbers come out, because the stocks report are exactly that, stocks on hand, what's left over from last year's crop, and then we've got the coming crop, and we'll know more about it again on the 12th day of October when the crop production report is released. When that actually happens, do you think USDA will adjust the acreage figure lower for it? Will they adjust the yield figure one way or the other along the way, too?
On October 12th?
Yes.
I think they should adjust it. It looks to me like they should adjust the acres. When you look at that prevented planting number that we saw back there in the middle of September from the FSA and our intentions and our actual plantings, it looks to me like there's probably a couple million acres there on corn that need to be adjusted. Whether they will or not is, you know, up to their process. But I think they will, and I think they'll make some adjustment downward on acres at least. And yield-wise, I'm not sure that we may not see a slight adjustment upward on yield, but stable to maybe a little bit better.
So you have to add both of those numbers together then for total in the bin once we get through harvest season.
And when you do that and really take it out to the end of next year, I mean, I think you're still looking somewhere, and Darryl will probably have better feel for this. I think you're still looking somewhere on this 800 million carryout or something like that, looking at the end of 2011-12 crop.
Is that where you stand, Mike?
Well, yeah, I think right now, I mean, we were at 672, and you add the 208 million carryover right now, you're already at 880. So there's a good chance that if the yields do improve, which we are hearing better yields pretty much all across the country than what farmers were expecting, not saying they're better than last year, but they're definitely better than what they found when they did their yield surveys in August.
And Mike Zuzulo?
Yeah, 800 to 825 would strike me as the range that I'll probably look for when we get to the October report, Todd. Having said that, I think we probably have dialed in after Friday's close where the December corn futures closed at. I would say we probably dialed in an 800 million bushel carryover at this point. So if we do come in at that price, at that stocks level, ending stocks level, and we aren't, you know, up in prices, and we're actually lower because of the outside markets continuing on down, I think that actually would be probably friendly or considered friendly by the trade.
Hold it. Go back through that number. Why? What would be considered friendly by the
well,
trade?
Well, I guess what I'm looking at from an undervalue, overvalue perspective is that when you close Dease Corn down 592 on Friday afternoon, I'm of the view that we've already dialed in the grain stocks increase, and we're already trading an 800 to 825 carryover at this point. Even before the report comes out.
Before the October report comes
right,
out.
Right, right.
Right. So if we're at that level, then you don't, do you hold much hope out for a higher price?
Yeah, I think we do, because I think at that point you have attracted demand, and I think at that point you've also rallied the wheat in relation to corn to where the market is going to see the wheat be a lot less competitive on the feed side going forward than it is in the corn right now.
So, go ahead. And the other thing I guess I was just going to throw in, Mike, is I'm not completely ready to just throw in the assumption that we're going to have better yields here. I think there are better yields than were perceived, but, boy, it's so variable. I mean, everybody that I talk to that's been harvesting has just got a wide range, and wide range within a section even, and it just seems to me like it's going to be one of those years where I'm not sure we're going to know till we get down the road a ways on how much we actually have out there in the bins.
Is Allendale ready to change its yield prospects potentially?
No, not yet. We're still sticking with our 147.7, what we've come out with the yield survey by the producers, because I agree with Bill. I mean, it's varied. Some are good, some are bad, and we ain't going to know the total until it's all over with.
Well, what should a producer, from your opinion, Mike, do at this point with the numbers that came in this afternoon? And are you with Mike Z that we've dialed in the ending stocks and the acreage figures and we're correct at the price level we are?
Well, I think we could, you know, we looked at the June grain stocks report that was another surprise. We went down 11.5% at that time. If we go down to another 11.5% after this one, we could go down into the 560s. And then I agree with Mike, you know, why do we need to go much lower? Our producers, we're telling them, if you haven't got it sold already, at least before this report, we were telling them, you know, put it in the bin, because basis is probably going to tighten up going into next year again, because they're going to need the grain. And that's what we're looking at, that it could be another tight situation. I think it depends on what part of the country you're in, too.
But basis is already really pretty tight.
Yeah, it's going to depend on where the basis is at as you're harvesting the corn. I think you could see some weakening as you get into the gut slot of harvest. But I think from a farmer perspective right now, one thing, of course, we're in the crop insurance, and we're getting pretty close to some of our put levels on crop insurance, especially on soybeans. If you have a reduction in yield at all on beans, or even an average yield, your put is kind of taking in the money right now. So those are some considerations too to look at when you're looking at whether you want to, along with, as Mike said, how much you've sold already in that point. If a person's 50 to 60% already sold in the corn market, I guess I'm not real excited about being real aggressive here on sales.
On new sales. Mike, Georgie, how about you on new sales?
Oh, I'd say put it in the bin.
And Mike Zuzulo?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're at a point now, Todd, where cash markets are the way out of this as far as the prices that we've lost. If we're going to get those prices back, it's going to be through basis. I think Bill and Mike are right on target there. And I think also a sharp move back up in the futures would be the idea that if we didn't go into, I think the trade overall is assuming now that we're going into another 2008. I think that's why the copper prices are dropping so hard and the dollar is rallying so hard. I mean, the dollar is almost an identical image to what it was in late 2008. So I think the stock markets in Asia are doing the exact same thing or close to the exact same in 2008. So if we don't have a 2008, I think this market is ready to see a lot of fund investment come back into the table. And I think the cash market is the best way to protect yourself if that rally comes, the cash being the basis and a futures rally. So I'm in a mindset right now that, because my analysis would say you are deep enough in trouble in Europe, and China has lost enough market capitalization that they could have a hard landing. It's reasonable to expect that a 2008-type financial crisis is around the corner now. So get some generic puts bought, 20-cent puts that give you a nice floor that gets you through the October-November time period. That's when the 2008 market really caused the most pain in the corn and bean markets. Otherwise, just hold pat with your cash in the bin.
Yeah, and very short, are you a holder of soybeans instead of selling them across the scale too?
I'm mixed on that, because if the Asian issue gets worse and the dollar continues higher, it's going to be more painful for the beans. So I could go either way on that. If you wanted to sell because you don't have the storage capacity for beans, I would re-own right away with a 20-cent call if you needed the cash flow.
I definitely agree with Mike. I would ditto that idea.
Yeah, I would agree. I think if you haven't sold any beans, you may want to look at making some sales here as you're taking beans into the elevator.
You're listening to Commodity Week as a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always hear us on our website at willag.org and find our daily programming as well, or on your smartphone at m.willag.org. Back in just a moment or two when we'll talk with ag economist Daryl Good.
For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg. An intense and very persistent upper-level low-pressure system dominated Illinois weather much of the week, bringing plenty of cloudiness, rain, and cool weather. Temperatures this week were 3 to 5 degrees below normal, with the largest departures in central Illinois. As the low sat spinning over the Midwest, temperatures just crept into the 60s during the day and dropped into the upper 40s and low 50s at night. The low was finally east of Illinois on Thursday, in time for a very brief warm-up ahead of a strong cold front. Highs on Thursday did reach 80 in parts of central and southern Illinois, but by mid-afternoon, temperatures were falling across most of the state. The cold, unstable air aloft associated with the low-pressure system helped produce occasional showers throughout Illinois this week. In addition, spokes of energy rotating around the low occasionally enhanced the rainfall. Precipitation across the eastern two-thirds of Illinois was 2 to 4 times normal. It dropped off to less than half normal in the St. Louis metro east area. We'll enjoy another cool fall weekend, but the weather will begin warming up next week as the center of the sprawling high-pressure system moves east and winds turn southwesterly. No rain is likely at all this next week, so conditions should be excellent for field work. It appears the next chance for rain may come with a cold front late next weekend. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the September 30 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. In studio with us, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing and Mike Georgie of Allendale on the phone line. Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. And Daryl Good as well. Daryl is from the University of Illinois, where he serves as an ag economist. Daryl, thanks so much for taking the time with us today. Can you go through how you view this latest USDA report, the grain stocks that came out on the 30th day of September?
Well, I'm going to admit to a lot of confusion about that, Todd. Clearly, the number was a surprise to the trade and to me personally, and being surprised is not all that unusual, but typically you can go back and reconstruct where did we go wrong in anticipating the stocks number, and this time it's pretty hard to do. I mean, corn feeding for the last half of the marketing year was, on the surface, if you believe the reports, was extremely small, 35% smaller than last year. At the same time, we fed less wheat, and we fed about 5% less soybean meal. Livestock slaughter weights were equal to those of a year ago. More cattle in the feedlot, feeding more hogs. I just don't have an answer at this point how we produced as much livestock as we did with as little feed that the stocks number would imply.
It's not from DDGs?
No, I mean, we had a small increase in DDGs year over year, but for the summer quarter, that was 3 to 4%. That really does not explain the drop in grain feeding. So if you ran the numbers now, what you would be showing is a record low amount of grain feeding per grain-consuming animal unit for the 2010 marketing year. It just, we produced a lot of livestock on very little grain.
It, wouldn't it be easier, Darrell, to explain if the wheat stocks had been lower?
It would have. Certainly that was what was anticipated. Now when we back up and calculate how much wheat we fed, excuse me, during the summer quarter, we actually find we fed less than last year by about 45 million bushels. That was going to be the explanation for why corn stocks were so big, but you know, that one doesn't work either.
To me, it's like this this feed usage number is the only thing in this report that's really bearish, and that's what's really got the trader's mind. But how much of this is still exiting because of the outside market news?
No, I think a lot of it has to be in that category. As Mike said earlier, I think a lot of there is a lot of good news on the consumption side at the margin, but that's being completely ignored right now. I think we are in just a liquidation phase that nothing is really going to keep the market from going down. It seems like that, unlike earlier this year when everything was on the bullish side. So it does give you the feel that things are being overdone here a little bit, but that doesn't mean it couldn't go lower, I guess, for a while.
Your question, Mike Zuzula?
Darrell, when you look at the month of September and the hard break we had, and you look at this grain stocks report, I've had clients call in about cash rent negotiations, and I saw there was a new farm doc cash rent bonus leasing arrangement that was really neat. But from a standpoint with fertilizer purchasing and cash rent negotiations, are we now on an upward trajectory in supplies so that it's going to be more difficult to get prices back up to those old levels and turning it kind of upside down, then we don't want to really push cash rent negotiations hard as far as locking in a bunch of years, or we don't really want to go out and lock in a bunch of fertilizer. What do you see on that front?
No, I think you're identifying a lot of risk there on that side. I think it's going to be very difficult to get corn prices back to where we had on the August highs with cash prices well over $7. So I think there is some risk on the income side moving forward compared to what things looked like late this summer. And then you also factor in that there is some potential for, at some point, increasing interest rates and increasing input costs of all sorts that I think the question is really what we need to be talking about right now.
Well, I want to step away from that part of it, Darrell, and look further out to the end of this coming marketing year, and that number for ending stocks, which is still awfully small for corn.
Well, it is, we think. The problem now, of course, is if the numbers that we're looking at for this past year are correct and we only fed 4.8 billion bushels of corn, what does that imply for feeding during the current year? USDA currently projecting 4.7 billion, which was 300 million below their estimate for this past year. Now can we reach 4.7 next year on feed use, or will we come back and find that we're actually using 5 billion bushels of corn next year? I think in the big picture, we will be looking at prospects for very tight stocks of corn at the end of the current marketing year. But there's still a lot of uncertainty about how much corn we're actually using in the domestic market.
Following up on that, Darrell, when you look out, and I don't know if you've done, I know you had earlier looked at some corn-soybean price relationships for next year. Where do you see us at right now as far as trying to get acres balanced between the corn and soybeans? It was running pretty dominant to the corn, wasn't it?
It was running dominant corn. Now I think there's a question of, with this stock number and the implied rate of consumption of corn, how much acreage do we really need next year? If we rebound to a trend yield and we're really using considerably less corn than we thought, there may not be nearly as much competition. If the market does think we need more corn, I think it's going to be a little more difficult to get it in 2012, at least in parts of Illinois where producers have experienced some yield problems with corn on corn. I hear a lot of farmers saying they're going to be reluctant to do that next year. So I think if we go into the first of the calendar year and say we really do need more corn, corn's going to have to carry a pretty good premium to get that done.
Darrell, what do you see on the world supply and the world demand? I know that's a lot of export to news, and they say it's going to be lower. But, you know, you're looking at China may look at more demand, but you also have a world supply that's tight. Is Brazil and South Africa and some of these Russian countries going to produce enough corn to cover some of that need?
Well, you know, in the short run, we had a pretty good crop in the northern hemisphere, no question about that, wheat and corn, and that's going to fill a lot of the need. But wheat feeding, you know, is temporal. That probably will go away as prices come back into more alignment. And now the question is really South America and how big will their crops be. So, you know, I think there has been some incentive to expand acreage and production, and I think we'll see a little bit more acreage of both crops in South America. Yield is still very uncertain, and I'm feeling fairly confident that we will see awfully good corn demand from China at some point. They're meeting their needs right now by reducing their reserves, but again, there's a limit to how much of that they can do.
And one last question, Mike Zuzlow.
Darrell, that brings me to the China question, more of a political standpoint and more of your history and how long you've been in watching these markets. It seems like we're ramping up on the trade restrictions. We're ramping up a little bit more protectionism against China. There might be a vote in the Senate next week on the currency manipulation bill. Is this kind of normal that we go through this when we are in a sluggish economy, and does this remind you of the beginnings of kind of like the Russian wheat embargo issue that we had back in 80, 81?
Well, you know, there's a lot of saber rattling, I think, in Washington, but I can't believe that it's going to be carried very far because we're just too dependent on China. China's too dependent on us that I don't think we can really threaten those trade relationships. The politicians, I think, have to show some bravado here, but I don't think it's going to go very far in terms of any kind of policy change.
Darrell, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Darrell Good, ag economist at the University of Illinois, joins us here on Commodity Week, a production of Illinois Public Media. Now a final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Bill Mayer.
Well, I think the situation that we currently have with the prices being down today and the big stocks number they came out with kind of puts a tougher decision here as you get corn harvested, you get it to the elevator trying to make that store sell decision. There is a basis decision there to be made, and right now it looks like, I would agree with these other guys, that it looks like you want to store, but you really have to take that on a day-by-day basis, it seems.
Bill Mayer is with Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign. Mike Georgie is with Allendale from Mahomet, Illinois.
Well, like we said before, this has been a very volatile year, but I think if you get your corn in the bin, the price can go lower, so you may want to use options for some downside protection and wait for it to rebound.
And Mike Zuzlow with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana.
Well, Todd, we talked Friday afternoon that we've lost a lot, but in 08, if we would have a repeat of what happened in 08, the corn market went down about 35% from its September close to the beginning of December, and the beans went down at about 20%. So there's still downside if we have these macro issues get worse.
Thank you much, and that wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week.